T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
Come on, turn the radio on a Saturday, and I won't be long.
Don't get me wrong. I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Oh, yeah. John Bolton just texted me.
Oh.
Just now, okay. He's watching.
Can you
and
read it?
He said, let's be clear, I resigned. And I said, do you mind if I say that while you were talking? And he wrote, yes. So John Bolton has just texted me to said I resigned.
So the big news of the last hour here is the resignation / firing of John Bolton. And that kind of came out of left field, it felt like. But I guess in issues that folks like John Bolton are dealing with, especially when it comes to national security, maybe you don't see everything that's happening in the background until then. Tony, do you have the details right now on what we know so far?
Yeah, so as Brian alluded to there in that clip that you just played, the president announced today that he has fired National Security Advisor John Bolton, saying that he strongly disagreed with his suggestions on a range of issues. In a tweet put out by the president, he said, I informed John Bolton last night that his services are no longer needed at the White House. I disagreed strongly with many of his suggestions, as did others in the administration. And therefore, I asked John for his resignation, which was given to me this morning. I thank John very much for his service. I will be naming a new National Security Advisor next week. Right after that tweet came out, Bolton swiftly challenged Trump's version of the events, saying that he offered to resign, and the president obviously accepted his resignation, but he says that he was not asked to quit, he was not fired, that Bolton says he initiated the departure. Mm-hmm. President says he fired him. So bottom line is John Bolton's not the National Security Advisor anymore.
Does it matter? I'm asking.
John Bolton just texted me.
Oh.
Just now. Okay. He's watching.
Can you read it?
He said, let's be clear, I resigned. And I said, do you mind if I say that while you were talking? And he wrote, yes.
So John Bolton's wanting to be clear, but there's probably some pride involved in I fired
yeah,
you,
I
resigned.
The,
but yeah. Does it matter on a national scale what happened?
No. I mean, just for the sake of palace intrigue, you know?
Yeah.
Just for the sake
there's
of...
There's only a little bit of that going on.
Yeah, right? I mean, there's always going to be... Any time there could be an internal fight, you know, strife within the White House, there's going to be a bunch of people that want to hear the story, you know, that want to hear the ugly details.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, you know, to a certain extent, that's ridiculous. But at the same time, the president creates a lot of it himself when, you know, he sends out this pretty strongly worded tweet that he fired John Bolton because he strongly disagreed with many of his suggestions, as did other in the administration, you know, making it sound like he was had these, you know, was like very unpopular and nobody agreed with what he did. Like, and so when you tweet that out, you sort of
he brought it on
you
himself.
Initiate
it's
the palace.
Classic that tweet out. Trump tweet.
Yeah, yes. You initiate the palace intrigue for a lot of people when you say that.
You know,
and
I understand
of course
what you're
John
doing.
Bolton doesn't want if John Bolton if if his version of what happened in his mind and heart are different than what Trump has said, if he feels that's not accurate, of course there's pride and ego involved in stepping up and wanting to say, hey, look, that's not how it went down.
You know how, like, you retired jersey numbers in sports?
Yes.
I think it's time to retire the question, how do you feel about Trump's tweets? It's not going to change anything how people feel. And it is definitely who this president is and will continue to be through 2020 and through 2024 if he gets reelected. I just think that the people who are still getting worked up about it, the people who support the president and don't like his tweets, what they're tired of doing is defending him. Just don't defend him. Be like, yeah, it was a ridiculous tweet. Like, full stop. Moving on. And that's what I think people are doing. The people who melt down over every tweet where the president tweets something like this, and then the never Trumpers that exist and the Democrats look at people who support this president and they go, how can you support somebody who talks like this? And I'm like, now you're asking me this question now? I've supported him all this time, and this tweet is going to be the one that you think is going to, you're going to call me out on? This is who he is. I got a message yesterday to the Facebook page in regards to the conversation we were having eventually about Pennywise in It. There's an Out magazine article, and it basically says that they're disappointed that Pennywise wasn't the LGBTQ ally that they anticipated that he was going to be, that he was actually a homophobe. And the article ends with Trump's America strikes again. There's not a word in this article about Trump. There's nothing about Trump. But the suggestion that somebody is a homophobe automatically conjures some image in someone's mind about how clearly Donald Trump and people, I guess, like me, who voted for him and who have every intention of voting for him again, are somehow responsible for this. That's neurotic. I mean, that point A and point B are so far apart, that is not a distance I can intellectually travel in my brain to understand how you can see this and just immediately assume that Trump is responsible. I mean, people talk and joke about Trump derangement syndrome. It's kind of a thing. Like, to be so worked up and obsessed about everything this president does, and he is the ultimate, you know, scapegoat for every issue that exists, it's ridiculous. And the people who are going to support him are going to support him, because there is seriously nothing coming out of this Democratic Party that is outside. I mean, it's at least 1 foot in socialism. What moderate person is going to leave the Republican Party to vote for socialism? It's just not going to happen. If anything, I think in 2020, we'll see an election of people who decide to stay home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah,
but
that's,
it's true.
That's the biggest risk that he runs. Quite frankly, that's the biggest risk anybody, they run on the other side as well. And I think that's what got Hillary Clinton. I think that she was unable to motivate people to go and vote for her. It wasn't that a whole bunch of people switched sides. Some may, you know, there's always a small percentage of moderates that, quite frankly, have a lot of influence on the election. But there's a small percentage of moderates that may switch sides from time to time. But the majority of people don't. They either vote for their candidate in their party, or they don't vote. They're not motivated to vote. And I think that's what got Hillary. And I think that's the only thing that Trump has to worry about, because the differences are so stark that, as you just mentioned, there's no way somebody who has conservative values is going to go, you know what, I just don't like the way Trump
I'm
going to
put Elizabeth Warren in the Oval Office to get back at Trump.
Yeah, I'm going to go vote for Bernie Sanders because I can't stand the way Trump tweets anymore. No, you'd be turning your back on all of your convictions.
That's where the phrase cutting your nose off to spite your face exists. This is the message I got yesterday, after we were talking about Pennywise and we were reading this Out magazine article, and the subtitle or the subheadline on here is "The Killer Clown Isn't the Ally We Thought He Was," which makes my head spin around like The Exorcist. Like, I don't understand. I'm watching from afar. I don't understand it. We got into a conversation. Katie was talking about how some of her friends who are in the LGBTQ community or are big supporters of the community, like, consider themselves as an active ally, which I think you do.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, like, that's, you're there.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
Would say things to you about Trump and how he is, you know, just in the same sense where it's like, I disagree with this, I disagree with this, I disagree with this. We're talking about a Stephen King movie. We're talking about a fictional character. As we mentioned yesterday, lives in the sewer and eats children. But the worst thing about him is that he's not an ally. And then the bottom, the last line that you just couldn't not write is Trump's America Strikes Again. Here's the message that we get to the show page yesterday. Miss Fry. It's Mrs. I thought you said today that Trump was not a homophobe. Why did he disallow gays from the armed forces? Here's what I'm going to do with that message, and this is what I responded. Your president is not a homophobe, and I'm certain there are many articles you can Google to hear his explanation of why he made that decision. It's his to defend. I have my understanding of why the president made that decision, and if I tell you why he made that decision, you're going to automatically assume that you know even more about me and where I stand, and then you're going to pigeonhole me on an issue that I can't win on because you've already determined that I've lost on it. Because that conversation right there, the reason why the president had the transgender ban, as he explained it to the American people, was because of the medications that are required to go through that process. That's the president's explanation for it. I am not the one who made that decision. And regardless of whether I would support it or be against it, the key thing here is that it's the president's decision. What we do today, what we work very hard on, is to punch and push Trump supporters into the ground so far and make me bear the weight of anything you want to attach to that decision, but you want to make it personal with me. Listen, I'm not here to change your mind on anything. I don't do this show for 3 hours to make sure that I can collect all the conservative Republicans in the St. Louis Metro East and say, and they are now mine. That's not why I'm here. I want to have fun. I want to entertain you. I want you to be here from noon to three every day and know that you are coming into a conversation with friends. And I want us, you know, when you're with your real friends, when you're with your family that you hang out with, you talk about real issues. You don't talk about the weather. You talk about the weather with people who you don't want to talk about the real issues with. But your best friends, there's nothing that's off the table. And that's what we need to be able to do here. And I need to be able to do it with you. And you need to be able to do it with me, where we bring our perspectives to the table and we discuss it without putting the pretense out there that somehow or another, all right, Annie, you're a homophobe. I'm going to explain to you how I came to that conclusion. There's no good faith in that. And we don't have good faith in our conversations anymore. We look for blacklisting. We look to out people. We look to destroy people. We look to get people canceled. We look to get people fired. And as a community and a culture, it is so self-destructive. And when we do that kind of thing, it's like we're all puppets on strings. That's what they want. They want us to be so far apart from one another when we disagree on things that we won't talk about the issues, so that we have this straight line from pundit and politician to voter, and we just turn like an empty vessel and look at these individuals and wait to hear what we think, wait to get our marching orders, wait to get our talking points. That is upside down world in this country. We are the ones who get to think what we want to think. We have three people in this room right now. Tony's in his early 40s. I'm in my mid-30s. Katie's in her mid-20s. We all have very different opinions on any given day about different issues. And in 2020, we might all vote the same way. But Tony's reason and Katie's reason and my reason for voting that way are going to be different. Maybe one of us won't vote the same way. And that'll be different. But that doesn't mean that we don't come into work the next day and like each other and work together and have thoughtful conversation where we dissent with one another. And at the end of the day, our relationship with one another is more important than feeling like you get to put another point on the scoreboard for your team. Your team doesn't wear red. Your team doesn't wear blue. Your team is sitting in the office next to you or in the cubicle next to you or sleeping in the bedroom down the hall or in the church pew in the front of you or behind you or in the lawn chair at the ball game on either side. This is our team. And the more that they try to divide us and kill us from within, the more they win and we all lose. And I'm sick and tired of it. That's why if you're gonna send a message to the show and you're going to say, you know, I'm going to tell you why the president is a homophobe and then you're going to put it on me to defend that, I'm just not going to play your game. If you want to have a discussion, say, you know, I feel like this is a reason why the president has this opinion and you want to discuss it, let's do that. Let's do that every day. Let's do that all day. And let's do it in good faith, because that's the only way that any of this is going to ever get better for any of us. Otherwise, it's down the road of tweets and Joe Scarborough getting to say whatever he wants to say that I cannot stomach anymore. And, you know, Rachel Maddow at night and Sean Hannity at night. And they're on different planets.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you're tired of it. You tell me all the time. You love it when we Snapchat the news with Tony and he looks like a pig.
Mm-hmm.
That makes people happy.
It makes me happy.
Makes me happy, as you can tell by the giggling I'm doing in the background. Go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/Annie Fry Show. You guys want an exhale. We're going to have that exhale here noon to 3 every day on 97.1. We're going to talk about the issues. You're just not going to hate yourself when we're done with it. We'll be right back.
I'm like the rock of the about an Air Force plane landing at an airport, which I do not own and have nothing to do with, near Turnberry Resort, which I do own in Scotland, and filling up with fuel with the crew staying overnight at Turnberry. They have good taste. Nothing to do with me.
Oh, Trump. Trump tweets by Randy Quaid.
He's so breathless.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
My favorite part.
I know nothing.
It's really bizarre and funny.
Yes.
It's great.
So the news of this morning so far is that President Trump fired John Bolton. And then the follow-up news is that John Bolton says that he resigned. Work that out amongst yourselves. Whatever that means. And according to Tony's report, he'll appoint a new one.
He said he'll appoint him next week is what he said.
Yeah.
The president said.
We're going to talk a little bit about the rally last night. Did either of you watch it?
Just the highlights.
Yeah.
That's typically my go-to. I just watch the highlights.
Yeah, the replays.
Mm-hmm.
There's a special election on the East Coast. Is it North Carolina or South Carolina? It slips my mind. I am digitally challenged today. And yesterday. But that election is the one that is being redone because they found out that there was fraud on the Republican side in 2018. So they're redoing that today. And this is the type of scenario where people will be like, you know, this will be a really bellwether election if the Democrat wins. And if the Republican wins, this will really show that Trump's coattails still have power. They say that about any election that's like a special election. Go back and think about all the special elections that we've had recently. A, can you tell me where they were? B, can you name a candidate? And C, do you know which party won? You don't. You don't. And if there's somebody who is winning in this direction here in the middle of September of 2019, I can't even imagine the amount of news that's going to exist between now and November of 2020.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? I just said right. I hate it when people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, let's get to the highlights.
Man. North Carolina.
I'm torn on which story I want to do.
North Carolina.
Put your hands up.
Who did we
expect? This is cool. I'm going to do this one. This is a super cool story. Two Civil War cannonballs have been discovered on a South Carolina beach in the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Civil War.
That's right. In the aftermath of the Civil War. A spokesman for the city
it's not,
of
not true, probably.
Folly Beach. No, you're exactly right.
Long time
said
coming.
Some seashell hunters spotted the suspicious item in the area of the old Coast Guard base at the east end of Folly Beach. It was reported to us as potentially older, unexplored ordnance, he said. As per our policy, we notified the Charleston
County EOD team. We also responded and assisted with notifying the military EOD team. It was determined to be a cannonball, one larger 8-inch shell, and one 3-inch shell. We advised the military team that the military team will handle disposing of them. Why dispose of them? How do you not keep that? That would be the coolest thing ever.
I wonder what they yelled when they found them.
Cannonball! Fire in the hole.
Four.
During the Civil War, the area was occupied by Union troops from 1863, according to the city's website. The troops overcame jungle-like foliage to build roads, forts, and artillery. And the island there was used as a staging ground and as a base when the Union tried to retake Fort Sumter during the Civil War.
You know that somebody yelled cannonball when they found the cannonball.
Cannonball coming.
There are people who were walking around giggling, trying not to yell it, and then they couldn't control themselves anymore. And those people are probably dads.
I mean, obviously, finding a couple cannonballs is not worth the damage of the hurricane, but I mean, at least that's one cool thing.
Cannonballs and cocaine.
I would totally geek out if I found a cannonball from Civil War era.
Interesting. Awesome. Up until about 2 hours ago, this speech from Mike Pompeo was supposed to be John Bolton.
Oh,
on
wow.
the heels announcing his candidacy for governor, Mike Parsons is scheduled to back in St. Louis to meet leaders over violent crime. Parsons is scheduled to meet with Mayor Lyda Crewson and County Executive Sam Page, among other law enforcement officials today. Parsons met last week with several dozen faith leaders and the mayor on the same topic. St. Louis has already seen 138 homicides in 2019, on pace to top last year's 186. And there's a Christmas ornament here.
Yep. I bought it at a yard sale.
Ooh.
50 cents. Turn it around. Did you see what it says
in
the back?
Gosh, there's nothing
Merry
better
Christmas.
Than a yard sale.
No.
Oh, wow. Cannonball X-Ray Radio. Look at that.
1987.
Put that in the old archives down the hall.
That's going cool. to give it to the program director and tell him he owes me 50 cents.
Perfect. So this is such a cute story. It's probably my favorite story of the week. A Florida boy was bullied for his homemade University of Tennessee t-shirt at his elementary school's College Colors Day and has not only had his design made official by the university, but the demand for the product is so high that it crashed the school's website. Laura Snyder, his teacher, says he drew a UT, the university's logo, on paper and pinned it to an orange t-shirt. Some girls at the lunch table next to his made fun of him because of the sign and how he attached it to his shirt.
How
and
old
he was
he?
Devastated.
Did it say?
It doesn't say in this article, but I'm sure it's easy to find out. She then posted on Facebook asking her friends if they had contacts with the university. Her post went viral. The university reached out wanting to send the student a care package full of swag and apparel. They also said they were turning the boy's handmade shirt into an official t-shirt. A portion of the proceeds from every shirt sold will go to an anti-bullying foundation.
So cool.
So awesome.
When I hear that, I think that's great. And I'm thinking, if I'm the mom of one of those girls.
Oh my gosh. Ooh, you're getting your butt whooped.
I'm just in a constant pursuit of not raising mean girls.
Yes.
And it's going to happen. It was at the fingertips of mean girls growing up, and I know that there were times I was a mean girl. So I think none of us are exempt, but it's a tough road to hoe. Don't be a Regina George. Mm-hmm. You know who I'm talking.
I think Tony and I are exempt. We're not girls. The Cubs picked up a half game on the idle Cardinals with a win over San Diego 10-2 last night. The Cards lead the Central Division by 4 games over Chicago and 6 over Milwaukee. They start a 3-game set in Denver tonight.
All right. Yeah, go Cardinals. I'm excited. I'm excited to watch every game that's taking place for the rest of the season and just march casually to October baseball. I have the time frame. This is what I do for Cardinals playoff tickets. I go back and look at the previous year when I got the promotional emails from the Cardinals that said, hey, postseason tickets are going to be coming up here. And then I mark that spot in my calendar to make sure I go check and get those tickets because I love playoff baseball. All right, when we come back, we're going to speak with Christina Partsenevola. She's with Fox Business. I'm going to ask her about some of the jobs numbers that are out here right now. We're also going to bring to you Mike Pompeo is speaking right now. We will get the highlights of that and bring it to you in the 1 o'clock hour. So full show here coming up for you. Stick around, Christina Partsenevelis, in about 4 minutes. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Great to be with you today. The news about the firing slash resigning details still out there. I guess we'll wait and see how this one shakes out of John Bolton. And in the midst of all of this, we have a lot taking place on the foreign policy stage. So it'll be interesting to see how they replace that national security advisor position, who they put in there, and how quickly they are able to do it. But in the meantime, here on the home front, we have a pretty thriving economy, and we have a lot of suggestions on how we should change it from the folks on the left who want to unseat President Trump in the Oval Office. Let's get to our guest. Christina Partsenevelis with Fox Business joins us now. Christina, it's great to talk to you today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So first, let me ask you this. And we get lots of different opinions from people about the state of the economy right now. If you listen to the Democrats in the running in the primary, they seem to think that there are a lot of things that need to change about how we do things in this country. What's your opinion right now on the state of the economy as it is today?
Well, I'm going to automatically say I'm not going to give an opinion, right, because I'm a journalist, but I can share the current numbers and the numbers that we're getting, let's say, like the jobs report that we got for August. It came in at 130,000 jobs that were added. So that sounds like a pretty decent number considering it was a little bit lower, but the economy in the United States is still chugging along. And we're also seeing a lot of strength from consumers. So consumers like you and I are spending money. If anything, though, we're taking out a little bit more credit card debt. So we're seeing that the Federal Reserve put out a report on Monday saying that the numbers for July were a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. But overall, the confidence is still here, and a lot of that has to do with the consumers. That's not the case, though, when you're talking about Europe, you're talking about China. You're starting to see a global slowdown. The United States, though, doesn't operate in isolation. So just to your question, that's maybe what some people are alluding to, that, oh, things are going to get worse here. We're headed for a recession. Or, oh, you know, everybody else is slowing down. We're going to eventually slow down, too.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand how that global economy works in with what we're doing. You can only run as fast as you can without considering the fact that there are other economies that we work with and that investing and the trading that is taking place from country to country, economy to economy, is going to have an effect. What are you looking at as far as the potential, the idea of a trade deal with China, how that will impact one way or the other our economy here at home, whether the deal gets done or whether the deal continues to be put off down the road time after time?
I think just based off of a lot of the traders and the guests that we have on the network over here, the concern is that this deal won't get done, especially won't get done before the 2020 elections, because China, they have their leader of their country, you know, President Xi Jinping, is there indefinitely versus President Trump that obviously has to go up for re-election again. And so that's the difference. They can wait it out, even though their economy is not doing as well, and they have a lot of debt. Debt levels are increasing there. They can ride it out a little bit longer. I think the issue for Americans, though, is the next set of tariffs that are supposed to be put into place December 15th. We had a very recent one, and we're not really feeling it just yet because a lot of retailers aren't passing it on to consumers. But come December 15th, that's when we could potentially really start to feel it. There was a note from J.P. Morgan, a bank, an investment bank, and they said that it could potentially cost American families almost $1,000 extra per year because a tariff is seen like a tax. It's up to the company to decide, are they going to eat it up or are they going to pass it on to the consumer in terms of higher prices?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that develops over the next few months. I wanted to ask you a bit about some of the policies that have been put in place so far, specifically tax reform. And we've seen before the midterm elections, the tax reform was put into place. A lot of people want to say that that's part of the success the economy is having right now. And there are other people who are saying we need to repeal that tax reform that took place. Has that tax reform allowed, as you said, consumer spending to have a little more confidence for Americans?
Yeah, there's no doubt that it added a few extra dollars into everybody's wallets. But if we were to judge on both sides of the aisle politically, you can't say, because we are currently in the present, and we don't know what's going to happen. You know, usually when you weigh whether an economy is doing well or is actually doing worse, you look in hindsight. And that's the issue right now, is that some people are arguing it's a false sugar high, that everybody had a spending a lot more because they got a little bit of extra a tax break, but that's going to, you know, dissipate over the next year or so. And so that's the major concern. And if we're looking, the Census Bureau today, they just put out some new numbers about the median U.S. household, so literally the one statistically in the middle, and how much income they're making. So in the United States, the median income right now is $63,200. And sorry, that was for 2018. If you compare that back into 1999, it's roughly the same figure. So the big question is, who's making all the money? Who's really seeing their income grow, their wage growth? Is it the bottom or is it the top? Is it the rich keep getting richer? Is that the problem? So that's a big debate, too, just to bring it full circle in terms of your tax question, though. There's no doubt that it definitely did help the economy. The question is, will that keep the economy chugging along? It may help corporations, because we saw a lot of corporations bring back their money into the United States when the corporate tax rate dropped to 21%.
Christina Partsinevelis with Fox Business, thank you so much for your time. We'll be watching for you on the television, and we really appreciate your insight today.
No problem. Have a great day. Thanks for having me.
You too as well. On Twitter, at Christina Parts. Interesting there. I look at these proposals that are coming out of the Democrats that are running, and it's like, you want to undo everything that this president has done, but then you want to, you know, you're going to repeal it, or you're going to re-regulate it, I guess. And then you're going to take it so far from where we've ever been before on a massive level. I mean, you can see Elizabeth Warren talking about wealth taxes that are going to cancel out student loan debt. This is an issue that I think is something that generationally, I feel like I'm going to tell you what the issue is here in a second. But when I talk about this, I think that the people who are maybe closer to retirement right now panic when they hear somebody who is normally fiscally conservative and outspoken in fiscally conservative issues. You think I'm slipping. But I know that student loan debt right now is massive. I graduated college in 06, and there were no jobs for somebody like me to move into and move up in. I mean, seriously, the people who are my age, mostly millennials, and I would say probably millennials that are probably between Katie's age and you're in your mid-20s and me being in my mid-30s, that we got out of college, we had the world at our fingertips, and then everything fell apart. Mm-hmm. So jobs became not available, wages went down, businesses closed up. There was no incentive to go out and take that risk and start something or put yourself out there, because the opportunity was restricting. So you got in where you could get in, and you worked hard, and you learned some lessons. And I would say now people who are my age are starting to feel like we've got a grasp on this thing. I'm not saying that we should have had the grasp when we were 25. Like, you don't have an understanding of what it's like to be building on something when you're 25, because you haven't had time. Mm-hmm. You don't have the benefit of time. It's also when you get to go out there and risk things and try new things. Like, Katie and I always talk about the difference in our lives, because I have three kids and she is married and she has a home. But Katie, you go float tripping, and you go
flying by the seat of my pants.
Yeah, have friends come over. And I mean, you're portable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not portable.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that I do at 35 with three kids under 10 with my husband, it's an act of Congress to get from one place to the other. I mean, I remember when we had our first child, and people would call us and be like, hey, you want to go out to eat? We're heading out to go to Applebee's or whatever. And I'd be like, be there in an hour, because you're adapting. Now I can get three kids out of the house. Like, you want to go out to eat? Yeah, let's go. Dump them in the car. And you just learn. You get better. So in your mid-30s, hopefully, if you've had some success, now you're starting to build on something. You have a little to lose. So when you think about the risk and reward, you kind of tighten that as well. Mm-hmm. People who are my age who did take out student loans, I think many people, I saw it happen to many people very irresponsibly. Nobody was telling them not to do that. And I firmly believe at 18 to be able to sign on a bottom line and borrow thousands of dollars that you have no concept of how much money that is. I feel like you should have to take a class.
Yes.
To take out student loans.
You
should have to pass a class Maybe it's a week-long class that explains, here it is. People talk about teaching, like, life skills in high school. And then other people are like, why should we have to teach life skills? That's stuff you should just know. Listen, people don't have life skills.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how to balance a checkbook in economics. I haven't written in a checkbook register for a decade. I don't do that because
I need to.
I monitor everything online instantly with my husband. Things change, and having the weight of debt on your shoulders, you don't know what that feels like at 18.
Mm-mm.
And even if you have fantastic parents who have taught you things, you're still not going to understand what it feels like to not have the safety net underneath you for when you fall. That's where you go from being a child into being a legit adult. And before we move these kids out of high school and into college, we're like, oh, and by the way, how's $30,000 sound?
Oh my gosh.
It's ridiculous. And we're pushing people. And you're getting degrees that aren't going to get you jobs.
Mm-mm.
You could go to get an associate's degree. You could go to a trade school. Like, kids aren't presented these options. Here's my controversial position. And you can call me and tell me what you think about this. 314-241-9797. I think that there should be an amount of money that you can get your federal student loans forgiven in exchange for taking years off your ability to draw on Social Security. So if you can get it at 67, maybe you don't get it till 70. Maybe you don't get it till 73. Because Social Security is a question mark, too, for my generation. 314-241-9797. We'll be right back.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.